Fantasy Edge with Jonathan Chan, Kevin Kuo, Richard Seville.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fantasy Edge. My name is Jonathan Chan, joined as always by the two co-hosts, Richard Seville and Kevin Kuo, for the third preseason edition of the show. And this will be quite news-filled, as it's a busy week in the NFL. Kevin, Richard, how's it going?
Not too bad. Can't complain.
Great to be back here for another edition.
All right. Well, as I just mentioned, it was quite a busy week for fantasy relevant players. So I guess we'll just dive right into the news. I guess the first one is a tweet from Adam Schefter about Dalvin Cook, who everybody's been a little bit concerned about throughout the preseason about the possibility of a holdout. And Schefter said on a podcast that if Cook hadn't signed a new contract by the start of the season, then he would be he would give pause to the IDF draft team in fantasy. For Richard, I guess, does this, I guess, give you pause to take and get Dalvin Cook in the top half of the first round of drafts?
This is still kind of a wait and see. There's still 2 weeks to go in the season. And while I do know in our F6P league, we're not drafting until the very last minute. So I think we're drafting in September 9th. But for people who are drafting now or next week, I think you still draft him as a first round draft pick. I think he wants to play. So I don't know how much. I think you just go ahead and draft him, because either way they're going to get him signed. Depending on how this season in quotes goes, but I'm more inclined to stay the course with Dalvin Cook. If you're drafting next week and nothing's changed, I think you still go ahead. Just stay the course.
And Kevin, with the news, does Cook change for you? And if he does, how much higher are you drafting Alex Mattison as a handcuff?
He doesn't change too much for me. I mean, I just don't really know enough about the verbiage of the contract, because I mean, we've dealt with holdouts before, and for some reason, like Le'Veon Bell missed a whole year. But Zeke and Melvin Gordon didn't miss the whole year. They only missed a couple games. So I don't really understand the verbiage of it. as far as Mattinson, though, that's the interesting one for me. I'm probably a little bit higher on him, and I'd probably want to get him as more than just a pure handcuff at this point. Seems like he might have some outside value, especially since Cook can't really stay healthy or hasn't proven to be the healthiest person in the past.
Yeah, that's basically, yeah, if you're drafting next week, you've got to take Madison, obviously. If you've taken Cook, you've got to take Madison. And Madison also goes up, just as insurance.
For me, that's an issue with, you know, Dalvin Cook being drafted so high, you know, mid top six in the first round, that if you're drafting a running back in the first round, and to say that, oh, you need this handcuff that's being drafted in, what, the eighth, ninth round, that's a lot of value you're losing on, you know, end of rotation starter or a top bench guy for somebody that realistically isn't going to play that much.
Well, I've seen it many times. We've seen it 1 year. The first week of the season, David Johnson was a 1.01 to 2 or 3 years ago. And he went down first week of the season. And if you didn't have that handcuff, that's your first round pick. I mean, your next pick in the draft is like 23 spots away if you're in a 12 team. So I think it's kind of worth it to get a handcuff if you've got like a very high draft pick, like if you're 1.01. Because I mean, that David Johnson, like, that was a disaster. People like gave up on fantasy football after that. It was so severe to somebody's fantasy football team. I don't know if you remember that, Jono or Kev.
I guess the point I was, the red flag with Cook is that if going into it, you know, you're supposed to be the rock on your team, you're going into it saying, oh, this guy's injury prone. Oh, this guy might hold out. Oh, I need his backup. That's not really what you want in a first round pick. And he's kind of off.
Oh, I see. Well,
off, yeah. My board-ish.
I see what you mean. I mean, he's absolutely sliding down my rankings. I think at the beginning of the preseason, I'm probably out on that, like, RB5. RB6, probably right after McCaffrey, Barkley, Elliott, Kamara, Henry. He was probably a solid 6 for me, but as the offseason's kind of gone on, he's gone closer to the back end, closer to, like, 8 or 9, like, 9, 10, something like that. Like, I'll definitely take Clyde Edwards-Helaire over him. I'd probably take Mixon over him at this point. Probably take Sanders Drake over him.
Mixon?
Yeah, Mixon's fine. I think that offense is going to be good.
No, but, just thought it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, your point in losing that eighth or ninth round pick is a big one, because in an eighth or ninth round pick, that's like a wide receiver three. And if you have to essentially draft a handcuff, I mean, I'm never one to really handcuff, but Dalvin Cook is someone that you do have to handcuff. Yeah, if you're losing out on possibly like, I don't know, a Tyler Boyd or something like that, just to have Dalvin Cook, I would just rather have Joe Mixon. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Definitely.
That's, I think that's what you're trying to say, right? But, yeah, I don't know.
But you see, right. The thing is that you can't do that with somebody like Christian McCaffrey. You can't say, well, Christian McCaffrey gets injured after week two, because there really isn't, on the Panthers, there really isn't. I know Mike Davis is sort of making a play for being the backup, but I think it'd be a committee if anything happened to McCaffrey. The issue of handcuffs is so divisive in the fantasy community. There are those who say you should insure your guy, which is fair. I mean, I used to think that way. I still do to a point, like in cases like this Dalvin Cook thing, where it is kind of important. Like, and people were doing that like last year with Ezekiel Elliott when he was doing his holdout, remember?
Yeah, I mean, for me, handcuffing is just a thing. If I know the guy, if I know the RB1, in this case, Dalvin Cook gets hurt, and the backup that I'm drafting is immediately going to step in and be an RB1, like Madison would be. I don't know that for Christian McCaffrey, because like you said, there's no one back there. Same thing with Saquon Barkley. Like, I'm not handcuffing those guys because their handcuffs suck.
Yeah.
Hey, you leave Wayne Gallman out of this.
Is he even on the roster?
That's just the first name I thought of.
I don't know who the guy is.
I assume it's Gallman.
Deion Lewis, but I don't
know. Deion Lewis.
Right? So,
Deion Lewis.
Yeah.
Yeah,
oh, yeah, yeah, no. There's no point. Moving on. This is, we don't want this to become the Dalvin Cook show, but, and moving on to another RB1 that you mentioned there that jumped ahead of Cook, Kenyon Drake was seen in a walking boot this week. Both he and Cliff Kingsbury kind of made light of the situation. Drake saying that, you know, he was in a boot this time last year, so he's just staying consistent, making sure his routine's the same. Same question, is there any concern over his foot, knowing that Drake's been kind of held back due to some nagging injuries over the past few years, Kevin?
Of course there's concern. I think one of my main concerns going into the season about Drake is that he's never proven he can do it. I mean, yeah, he did it for a 12-game stretch, but even before that, he was kind of hit or miss. Do I have a lot of concern because of the walking boot? Not necessarily, because I think these things do happen, but it's just another reminder that he might not be, you know, an 80% of the touches kind of guy. Like, they do have other talent in that backfield, so... I mean, Chase Edmonds is a guy that I've been pumping up all offseason, and I'm not saying that he's going to overtake Drake, but I think he might surprise and kind of do some things that complement Drake.
Yeah, I think Chase Edmonds is a good player. Yeah, I like the way he plays football. Watching him play he even outplayed David Johnson, and David Johnson just didn't look like Everyone David Johnson David last year.
Yeah, yeah, David Johnson wasn't David Johnson last year. That was bad after his injury.
No, he wasn't very good. But again, this is sort of ties into that, do you handcuff him or not? And since Chase Edmonds is such a low handcuff, you're not, whereas Madison is a bit of a higher handcuff. So, you know, you kind of got to spend a little more draft capital on him. But Chase Edmonds is so low, you can pick up Kenyon Drake and then get Chase Edmonds for a lot cheaper since he is more of a truer handcuff, because Madison does mix in the offense.
Chase Edmonds, let's not forget Eno Benjamin as well. There have been some really good reviews coming out of Cardinals camp about him, the rookie. So we'll have to see how that works out behind Drake if he does get hurt. I guess the last round, first round running back I'll touch on. I know we touched on Clyde Edwards-Helaire a little bit a couple weeks ago, just about his rising draft stock and everything. But the Kansas City GM threw some more fuel onto the fire the other day, saying that he will be the primary ball handler and is in for a big year. I guess, is this increasing the confidence that nothing screwy is going to happen with his touches and that he is going to be, you know, the do-it-all three-down back in Kansas City, Richard?
I think that's probably where it's gearing toward. But I am also in the back of my mind, it's almost, you know, Damian Williams was supposed to be the all-around back, but Andy Reid went and got Shady McCoy. And now this year he's picked up Dwayne Washington, who happens to be the most experienced. So he wants an experienced back mixing in. So I'm not sure if it'll be committee-ish, but I'm pretty sure it's Clyde Edwards-Helaire is going to be the, not a, I wouldn't say bell cow, but You're looking at upwards of 15 to 20 touches a game with the others mixed in. Probably Darrell Williams. I don't know about Darwin Thompson. I think it's either Darrell Williams or Darwin Thompson. I know Andy Reid likes both, but I think he prefers Darrell Williams. But as for Dwayne Washington, he's a guy to watch in their offense. But I think it's Edwards-Helaire. He's a pretty safe pick. And I know Kevin just mentioned he's moved him up the draft board. I don't see anything wrong with that. If you feel the inclination to draft him higher than his nominal ADP.
Yep. And Kevin, you took him at number 5 in the F6P mock we did last week. Is that about where you're comfortable ranking him and taking him if this is your home, your money league?
Yeah, I think a lot of people are trying to talk themselves out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think he's kind of a great intersection of everything that you want. He marks all the boxes for like a first round running back. He's got the talent, he's got the opportunity, he's got the offensive scheme and the ability and the like. He's an offense that's going to score touchdowns, and all these people are trying to kind of like overthink it, like, oh, DeAndre Washington, oh, what about Darrell Williams? Like, these dudes are backups. Like, DeAndre Washington has been a backup for 4 years in Oakland. He backed up Marshawn Lynch when Marshawn Lynch was 1 year off retirement. Like, these guys are not anything special. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire is getting Brian Westbrook comp from the head coach. Like, I think at a certain point, you just take it for what it is. The guy is going to be a stud.
Yeah, and not only that, in the sense of, if you remember Christian McCaffrey's rookie year, if it were Christian McCaffrey and his, like, everybody exploded on him, not knowing what he had. But once the season got going, Christian McCaffrey was, very highly regarded. I think it's a similar situation, isn't it, Kev?
Like, yeah, I mean, first-round picks, it is what it is. Like, if you're a first-round running back, you just get the opportunity. That's just how it goes. I can't really think of a running back who got drafted in the first round that wasn't immediately thrown into the fire. Yeah. I guess the one that comes to mind is Mark Ingram, but that was years ago, and they had pretty talented backs back there too.
Yeah,
was Bishop Sankey first round? Oh, no, he was second round.
No,
because when I didn't blink when Kevin took Clyde Edwards-Helaire fifth in our mock. I didn't think of it as. I thought, okay, he thinks that. I mean, I didn't think it was like eye popping or anything like that. It was just like, okay, what are you thinking? That's where you're thinking. It's you can think like that, and it's perfectly fine. I tend to think it was. I tend to think that fifth is a little bit bold, but it's not bad.
All right, and I guess the big news of today, that would be today's Wednesday,
Tuesday. Today's Wednesday.
Today's Wednesday. Big news of Wednesday is David Montgomery went down during Bears practice and was reportedly carted off, but then was later said to have walked off under his own power with a lower body injury. Some are saying the knee, some are saying it was a groin strain. Kevin, does this help Tariq Cohen, or is he already entrenched in his role enough that whatever other backups the Bears have are going to be, the guy to take over David Montgomery's carries if he misses time?
Yeah, that's what it's going to be. If David Montgomery is forced to miss time, I'm seeing somewhere it could be 3 or 4 weeks, which could be, into week 2 of the season. Tariq Cohen is going to do what he does. He's not going to change his role. They're not going to handle the ball 20 times a game. That'd be insane. I fully expect them to bring in a veteran or trade for somebody, because the only other two running backs on the roster right now are some guy named Ryan Nall and some guy named Artavis Pierce. No disrespect to them, but I have no idea who the hell they are. There's a lot of teams with surplus running backs out there. I mean, obviously Gus Edwards comes to mind.
Want Gus Edwards off the team, don't you?
Yeah, it's not that I want him off the team.
He wants assets.
He does. He wants him off the team.
He wants Ravens assets.
Yeah, I'm trying to win. I love Gus Edwards. I'd love to see him flourish in Chicago. I just know he's not going to get 80 carries this year because J.K. Dobbins is a monster.
No, but it just seems like every time there's sort of like a trade rumor going on, we could trade Gus Edwards for him. And a third round pick next year.
If the Bears trade for Gus Edwards will be in a 50-50 split with David Montgomery by the end of the season. Gus Edwards is good, but he's not as good as Ingram, and he's not as good as J.K. Dobbins.
But I just got to know why every package deal you come up with always includes Gus Edwards.
Because he's talented, but he's unnecessary. He's extra on the team. What are we going to do with three talented running backs?
I know.
And Justice Hill.
And Justice Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
And Lamar Jackson, who's a running back.
He's a wide receiver, excuse you.
Yeah, sorry.
Speaking of wide receivers, a couple of, one Charger and one former Charger. We'll start with Tyrell Williams. Reported that he tore his labrum this week and will attempt to play through it after a couple weeks of rehab during the season. Tyrell was already an end of the draft kind of flyer guy as the number two receiver on the Raiders now, barring whatever Ruggs does. But is this now the Bryan Edwards show? Is he going to take over, Richard, or is it going to be more Renfro and Ruggs?
Well, I have to tell you, I don't know much about Edwards, to be honest. But as for this is actually the first time I've heard about this injury. I was never high on Tyrell Williams to begin with. I wasn't high on this Raiders offense to begin with. Renfro's not the Tyrell Williams type of style. Renfro is more of a, he's kind of in that Cole Beasley, type of player to me. So I don't expect it to be, unless they move people around and so forth. I'm just going to check on this, check on how bad this injury is. It's torn labrum week to week. Yeah. So Bryan Edwards and Henry, yeah. See, I don't know much about Henry. I don't know much. I'll have to pass this over to Kev because Bryan Edwards is not on my radar at all.
Okay. Yeah. I'll take that pass because Bryan Edwards is on my radar. He's one of my favorite late round sleepers. Third round pick. He's typical. He's like one of those 6'3", 220-ish guys who can run and, you know, catch those kind of, you know, prototypical X receivers, or Z receivers, I guess. Derek Carr compared him to James Jones, said he's a reliable guy, you know, who can get 50-50 balls. And with Derek Carr throwing the ball, that's something that is very necessary. Tyrell Williams, I think his injury only helps Bryan Edwards kind of inserting himself into that offense a little bit, since, like you said, Hunter Renfro is never going to be that guy. And I don't know about Ruggs. I have little questions about him. But, I'm always sold on the kind of big-bodied receivers who can run. So I do like Bryan Edwards in late in my draft.
Yeah, I mean, Williams has tried to play through these kind of injuries before. But even last year, his targets were down. He's playing through injury again. And even toward the end of the year, like at the start of the year, he caught a lot of touchdowns. He was producing for them, but got hurt, came back. The targets weren't there. The touchdowns weren't there. And it's very clear the Raiders were looking for somebody else to take over. So Williams is probably off the board for the most part now until he proves he can come back healthy. Moving on to Mike Williams now. He, just like Tyrell, suffered a shoulder injury in practice, suffered a shoulder sprain again week to week. Is Keenan Allen's stock now a little bit higher? Are some of the concerns about, you know, the target numbers going to be alleviated now that Tyrod has to throw a little bit more to him? Richard?
I think that's probably a good idea to do that. Because Tyrod Taylor is more of a dump off type of passer. I don't really consider Tyrod Taylor like, you know, like the deep ball, because that's basically what Mike Williams is, his forte is. It's kind of like he's kind of the home run ball type of guy. In fact, I remember several times he saved my fantasy bacon just like a fourth quarter, like long, you know, pass caught. So I don't know who the other long passing, pass catching, guy is on the Chargers. So I think what it really helps is Hunter Henry of all people. If he's off, cause I think Hunter Henry will get, a lot more work. So, just judging by the offense and how I think it'll be structured, I don't think it's a big loss to the offense, because I don't think Williams is losing any. He's kind of floated around, like he's not been a really he isn't a high temperature target in fantasy this year. I'd put him sort of like low to medium temperature of if that. Of a target. So so people aren't losing anything by passing on Mike Williams anyway. So that's just how I feel about it. Kev?
Yeah, Mike Williams isn't someone I'm high on this year. I just he got 1,000 yards on 90 targets, 50 catches. That's 20 yards per reception. That's and it with an insane pace that I don't really think Tyrod Taylor can support.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine that he's going to get more targets. So you're kind of capped out at 90 targets.
Yeah.
If he catches the same amount and the yardage and the efficiency goes down, sure, the touchdowns might go up, but that still leaves you with like a borderline wide receiver four. It's just nothing too interesting for me. I don't see the ceiling for him. So, I mean, with this injury, he might miss two games. So that brings it down even lower for me.
Yeah, and he's an air yards guy too. So, right, Kev, he's an air yards type of receiver. And right. Tyrod Taylor just does not, as you say, support an air yards receiver.
He used to. In Buffalo, he used to kind of air it out with Sammy Watkins. But nowadays, I think he's a little bit older. I don't think he's that type of guy anymore. He certainly wasn't with the Browns.
Yeah, I remember him not being able to pass to Josh Gordon. What a waste that was.
That's the worst thing you could possibly do.
Yeah, just not pass to Josh Gordon all day? Come on. Oh. Obviously a waste.
Oh, you mean like Tom Brady hardly ever throwing to him?
Tom Brady wasn't throwing to anybody when Josh Gordon was playing for the Patriots.
Well, I don't know. And neither did Russell.
He did. He for snap counts, he actually did throw to him quite a bit, more than Brady was.
Mr. Unlimited. Gotta be unlimited.
You just want to work that in there, didn't you?
Had to.
Gotta be on
the. Yep. Well, speaking of Brady receivers, beautiful segues here. Chris Godwin has sat out three of the last six Buccaneers practices. When asked, Bruce Arians said, "That's for me to know and for nobody else to know." Is there any concern that Godwin's hurt, or is this just getting veteran getting rest days kind of thing, and Arians just kind of trying to emulate Belichick and make Brady happy, Kev?
No, there's got to be something going on because he is not that much of a veteran. I think he's been in the league 3 years. So if Mike Evans isn't sitting out, there's no reason Chris Godwin should be sitting out unless he's got probably some kind of nagging injury. It's probably nothing big, but it is what it is. Especially considering that, you know, he's trying to get on the same page with a new quarterback. Like, you need as many reps as you possibly can get. So for him to be sitting out, it must be somewhat serious. That being said, I don't think it's serious enough for me to, like, not draft.
He says, you know, I think that's so weird. That's one of the weirdest words, me to know and for you to find out. Whenever you hear that, I think it might be something like, it could be a personal issue. It could be anything. Like he could be suffering from depression or something. Who knows? You know, like it might be just depressed or something. He's had a breakup or something, or he's, I don't know, maybe he's moving. You know, I don't know. You know, like things get players down. Players are people too. And I think Arians is being a little coy about it, since Godwin is probably just coming to what could be something just simple as that. So I still find it interesting. I don't know what it could be.
Yeah, well, we'll find out soon enough. Like Kevin said, I'm sure it's nothing serious. Godwin will play, but it could be a nagging thing, maybe a soft tissue injury, like a calf strain or something, but she'll play all however many games are played this year. I guess one quick thing that I'll mention, because we have to throw it in every week. Sonny Michel is no longer on the PUP list, so he will play, and now the Patriots backfield is just infinitely more muddled. Damien Harris hype is gone. Sonny Michel's going to come back in and fall down at the first sign of contact. So I'm back to avoiding everybody in that backfield except for James White. Hashtag on brand.
No. Damien Harris hype still lives.
Oh, because Sonny's going to get hurt game one?
Yeah. Also, he's bad at football.
he's not that great, you know, Jono. He's really not.
I'm well aware. I say this every week, Richard. Sonny Michel is not a good football player. Especially not good enough to be drafted above Nick Chubb.
I just don't hope they push. They should try and push some of the. I think Damian Williams will get some. The problem is, as usual, with the Patriots offense and the way Belichick likes to run the backfield, it's always like mix, mix, mix. You never know. One week, you know, suddenly, you know, first series, and there's, what the hell's Burkhead doing out there? You know what I mean? So that's the problem, is that when you're, it's the first quarter, the Patriots first possession, and Burkhead's out there. Why? Just to throw people off, you know, that's the Belichick way. And also we hate your fantasy football team.
Well, with Belichick, the first drive is always super, super scripted, and it usually works. It's afterwards that is the troubling drives.
Hmm.
Anyways, let's move on to, that was a long news segment. Our feature of the week, which is our bust picks. again, as always, busts are not somebody that we think is, you know, going to be garbage, just that might not perform up to their current draft price. Start with the quarterbacks. Kevin, you want to go with one of your two there? I'll let you pick.
Sure. So my bust, thanks for giving us the preface, because I don't think Deshaun Watson is going to be trash. I just don't think he's worth his ADP right now, which is 59 in season-long league. I think there's a very clear tiering of quarterbacks this year. I think you've got Lamar and Patrick Mahomes in tier one. And then right behind them, you've got Dak and Russell Wilson tier two. Some people seem to have put Deshaun Watson in that tier two with them, but I think he's pretty far below them. So for him to be drafted at 59, I don't really see how it's worth it. Deshaun Watson is, he's been consistent, obviously 26 touchdowns in the last couple of years, 4,000 plus yards. He's going to add those rushing numbers, but we've never seen him without DeAndre Hopkins. And while I expect him to be probably fine, he might not be as good. And if you're taking him at 59, at that point, I just think it's not worth it.
Is there any, I guess, obviously he's going to be running. Do you think the running kind of balances off his floor so that he, I guess he won't bottom out as much as some people are worrying about?
Yeah, that's the thing. He does have a floor. I mean, he's basically a slightly better Josh Allen. Just, you know, maybe higher upside. I just can't really justify taking him in like the fifth or sixth round when I could, like, I just get Josh Allen in the eighth round or I can get, I don't know, Jared Goff in the 12th round or something like that. Like, I'll live with the 2 points, 3 points for the difference.
Fair enough. Richard, you have some, somebody as your QB bust. That's, everybody has the arrow pointing up. Why is Dak Prescott's arrow going down for you?
I'm pure regression. I don't know how he's going to work with McCarthy. I know he had close to 5,000 yards his first time, but the norm for Dak Prescott is actually below 4,000 yards. And so this is a pure regression thing. I'm not saying, like, there's only two quarter, this isn't really a true bust, but I'm just saying that I would draft Russell Wilson or Kyler Murray ahead of Dak Prescott, and that would make him QB5 instead of QB3. Like, a lot of people have him as QB3. I don't see him as QB3. I just don't. Because, you know, all of a sudden, like, how many years we had him, like, at QB12, and then suddenly has one big year, and we expect the Cowboys are just going to turn around. Like with him, Jason Garrett had to go, and they had to get a new coach. There's no question about that, but I just don't know how McCarthy is going to run this offense. And if he runs it like, if you think that Dak Prescott is going to be suddenly like Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre, you know, I just don't see it happening. I think there's just a little bit of extra hype. So, you know, it's not really a bust, but I just think that there's two other quarterbacks I'd rather have ahead of him. So it's not really a big bust where you thought, oh, I really blew it. Like, I mean, if you draft him third, fine. You probably get by. But he doesn't seem like a safe pick. He's not as safe a pick as Russell Wilson. Now you could argue that Kyler Murray isn't safe either, but he's got DeAndre Hopkins there now, so, you know, there's a lot of difference. And also, Kyler Murray's a far better passer. That guy just slings that ball, and I just don't see Dak Prescott being as good as Russell Wilson and Kyler Murray. That's just my opinion.
Richard, you mentioned the I guess the regression there. Kevin, is there without Jason Garrett as his coach anymore, adding, you know, offensive minded coach like Mike McCarthy, adding CeeDee Lamb, is there any thought, as unlikely as it is, to Dak having a better season than he did last year with an extra weapon? You know, Zeke is there practicing for the full year. He won't, you know, look a little winded like he did in the early last year. Having a full strength offense underneath the struggling mind of Jason Garrett.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible. I wouldn't bet on it. He had nearly 5,000 yards and 30 touchdowns last year. Where I think he could improve is the touchdowns. 30 isn't like a crazy number. He could certainly have more than 30 touchdown passes. The thing about Mike McCarthy is that he is used to running those three wide receiver sets, and I'm positive they didn't draft CeeDee Lamb just to have him or just to not use him. So, I mean, the usage, they're going to run a lot of three wide sets, and that it will make running the ball. I mean, they're always going to run the ball too, but it's going to make throwing the ball pretty easy if the defense still have to key on Zeke. So, I mean, that offense is going to be nuts. I just, so I could see more touchdowns coming. I can't really see him getting back to 4,900.
That's fair. 4,900 yards is a tough ask. Moving on to my bust. I'm sure a lot of people know about this one. I'm going with Josh Allen. A lot of the same arguments that Kevin, you made for Deshaun Watson. He's right now on Fantasy Pros. He's ranked ECR at overall like 71. He's actually going 8 spots after Deshaun Watson, or 9 spots after Deshaun Watson, and it's too much. I think obviously his rushing gave him a nice floor and a great ceiling. He's averaged over 500 yards a year and almost 9 touchdowns a year. But with the Bills drafting Zach Moss and then Devin Singletary, you know, playing as well as he did last year, I think the Bills are going to try to get Josh Allen away from running so much because he took some big hits and missed a game because of concussion last year. I don't think they're going to put, you know, their franchise QB in such danger. I think the rushing could come down a little bit, especially the touchdowns and the attempts. And honestly, the passing is still a little iffy. Yeah, iffy enough for me, even with the addition of Stephon Diggs, that it's not enough for me to say, hey, this is a, you know, he's going QB7 right now. It's not enough for me to take him over established guys on the hope that he gets better, even though he's still averaging career-wise fewer yards and fewer touchdowns in the air than Tyrod Taylor did in his Buffalo years. There's not enough there for QB7.
I kind of disagree with you, Jono.
They're going to come for you.
Let him come. Let him.
Oh my god. Tweet it out. Josh Allen stinks.
Dude, they're enough of this Josh Allen, like just searching, like just hard searching Josh Allen on Twitter for no reason. Anyways, Richard, you were saying.
I was saying that don't be too hard on Josh Allen. Do you not know? I don't know why people cannot see that Buffalo is an RPO offense. They are. They are what they are. It's an RPO offense. They're just like, they're not as effective as Baltimore is, but they are a basic RPO team. Sorry, I got interrupted there for a second.
I mean, I'm not saying Buffalo's not a good team. Like, McDermott's a good coach. The defense is great. Allen's going to have all the opportunity. But with the defense being as good as it is and the East looking as wide open as it once was, I don't think Allen's going to have to throw as much. And I don't think they're going to put him in a position to have to run as much as he did and have to make those plays because they have guys like Zach Moss, Devin Singletary to take that pressure off of him.
Yeah, but that's what Frank Gore was there for. So, I mean, that's...
I mean, Zach Moss is going to do more than Frank Gore did. Ageless as he is.
Well, that's the debate between Singletary and Moss, but we'll save that for another time. But on the Josh Allen front, I have him as QB8. Now, I will admit, that's currently. I don't like him at QB8. I think he should be closer to QB10. But I have to adjust my rankings. That's only because I just noticed that he shouldn't be at QB8. He should be at QB10. So for all intents and purposes... Yes.
Let's move on to the running backs here. I guess, Kevin, you went first with the quarterback. So, Richard, you can go first with the running backs. Me and you have the same running back on the top of our bust list here. Why don't you go ahead and talk about Miles Sanders?
This is the case of, and a lot of people are talking about this, is that will Doug Peterson employ, it's used to be a 3 or 4 headed monster. You remember Corey Clement, you know, and Darren Sproles and Miles Sanders and Boston Scott. I think they were all in there at one time. I really don't think there's any difference that's going to in the offense. So you could very well be drafting Miles Sanders and then you see a lot of Boston Scott. It could be Doug Peterson could go for, he could go in that hot hand often, you know, habits are hard to break with teams. So I don't know if that's the way you feel, Jonathan, while the downside of Miles Sanders, but I just feel that Boston Scott's just actually too good not to utilize.
Yeah, for me, it's not that Scott is like some super amazing, like underappreciated backup. It's more Sanders was his, you know, incredible numbers and most of his production when the Eagles offense had literally nobody besides him. Like Alshon was hurt, DeSean Jackson was hurt. Well, he's always hurt. And so is Alshon. But, you know, like it was like JJ, Arcega, Whiteside, and, you know, there was just nobody else to give the ball to, and Sanders was just getting everything he can handle. This year, it's probably going to be a little bit different. Jalen Reagor's there now. Of course, Alshon's still hurt, but DeSean Jackson's apparently healthy. I just don't think he's going to get the same amount of touches and opportunity that he did toward the end of last year, and people are banking on that production. And as his ADP creeps up, I don't think he's going to be able to return, you know, end of the first round production.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. So, Kev, if you have any Miles Sanders stuff, you can add on. If not, let's move on to your first bust.
Yeah, I could add some Miles Sanders stuff. He's good at football, and I'll leave it at that. I think he's good at football. That Eagles often should be better with Carson Wentz back healthy. Yeah, like you said, Boston Scott's not that worse. I mean, you have to consider he did this without all those people, but that could also be looked at as like a positive for him, right? Like now the field is going to be a little more opened up. It's not going to be as much of a struggle as it is for him. But I mean, I can't really disagree with it. Sanders is someone that I just like watching. So I think that's why I'm high on him. My first bust is Josh Jacobs. Josh Jacobs is currently being drafted as the RB12 around there. My problem with Jacobs is just that Las Vegas just keeps signaling to us that they don't want him to be a three down back. He had 27 targets in 2019. They drafted Lynn Bowden, who's basically like a gadget type guy. They just brought in Theo Riddick. They brought in Devontae Booker. These are all pass catching backs.
Theo Riddick. I forgot about that.
Yeah. So it seems to me like they just want him to be a two down back. And sure, he was great last year, 1,150 yards and 7 touchdowns in 13 games, but that's like if in today's day and age, especially since half PPR is kind of the standard now, if you don't catch the ball like at all, it really limits your ceiling. Like you're really just counting on touchdowns then. And I don't see Josh Jacobs really scoring that many touchdowns with the Raiders offense. So I think 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns is probably as good as it gets. It might get 1,400 yards, 8 touchdowns, something like that. But you're definitely not getting any of the receiving yards, which means I'm not going to take him over someone like Mixon who's going to catch the ball. I wouldn't take him over someone like Sanders, Drake, Eckler. Those dudes are all going to catch the ball. They're going to get you free, easy points from receiving yards and half a point per reception.
Kev, I have him at RB15.
Yeah, that's probably about right. Yeah, I'd probably take him right above, like, I don't know, Gurley if I'm feeling risky. Fournette, definitely take him above Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, that tier. He's probably one of the last guys in that tier for me.
Yeah, so I guess moving on, Richard, you have a pair of rookies as busts. Why don't you pick which one you want to go with and then move on from there?
Well, I'm going to take Swift. I think there's a little bit, Where does Kerryon Johnson fit in? Kerryon Johnson's not really that bad of a running back. And it's also the case of how Detroit runs an offense, too. I just don't feel that they like to run multiple backs. Usually, like when Theo Riddick, they sort of had Theo Riddick and they had sort of like their main bell cow. But it was always separate. So it's kind of hard to say about how Swift. I can't see Swift getting all these suddenly getting a majority of the targets being a bell. I just don't see a bell cow role, because with Kerryon Johnson, to me, it just seems like a timeshare. Kerryon Johnson is going to get his carry. So I don't know. I just feel that DeAndre Swift. I have him at. At RB28, and I suppose that's fair, but a lot of people are drafting him a lot higher than that, and I don't think you should. I have him at RB28, and I think that's about right. I don't know what you think, Kev, about DeAndre Swift, but it's definitely a timeshare going on there. It has to be.
I'm probably a little higher on Swift. I think he was, people are like looking at him as a second round pick, but he was the 34th or 36th overall pick, which is basically a first round pick. He was like the consensus number one running back for a while until CEH kind of burst onto the Chiefs, took him first. I think Kerryon Johnson is okay, but obviously the injury concerns, he's been hit or miss when he's on the field. And I think Swift is kind of just more of a steady guy. And I'd be more confident that he wins the job, or at least wins like 60-40, 65-35, than clear 50-50 split. So I'm a little higher on him, but I see where you're going.
Yeah. The thing for me with Swift is that he can be good, but like Richard said, like Kerryon Johnson's kind of there. He'll siphon carries either way, whether or not he's like super efficient with them. But the Lions running game is like never good, regardless of who they put in there. The Lions just can't seem to get a running game going. I think the last good one they had before injuries took his career was Jarvid Best. And it's just a struggle until Swift actually shows something. It's a difficult situation to draft him where he's going. Kevin, I guess since me and you both have Melvin Gordon on the bus list, why don't you get that conversation started?
Yeah, Melvin Gordon is just a guy that, I mean, that actually, that's the best way to put it. He's kind of
just a guy. Just a guy.
Yeah, like, I get that he was a first-round pick. I get that he's like a size, speed, monster, and all that stuff. But the production just hasn't been there. Pretty much any advanced statistic you look at, he's just an average back, except like he's a good goal line back, which is all right, fantastic. But how many goal line opportunities is he really going to have on this Denver offense? That's my main thing, is when he was with the Chargers, like him and like Phil Rivers was marching up and down the field, scoring a ton of touchdowns, throwing the ball a lot. And Melvin Gordon could kind of pick up yards. He'd pick up points from scoring touchdowns from within the inside the 10-yard line and catching the ball. I just don't really see him doing that in Denver a lot. I'm not even really considering Philip Lindsay. To me, it's just that the Denver offense, I don't think will be very great. Like, there's no reason to believe it's going to be good. They have a defensive coach. They have a second year quarterback who I didn't think he was very good in his first year, to be honest. A lot of people are hyped about Drew Lock, but I didn't think he was very good. So I don't really think that offense is going to be fantastic. So I just don't really see where the opportunity is for Gordon. He's going low enough where you can justify. I think he's going like RB7 or something like that. So that's fine, but he's just not someone I see the upside with.
Vic Fangio is a weird coach.
Exactly. I mean, Melvin Gordon for me is just, I know you disregard Philip Lindsay, but mine is Philip Lindsay is not really going anywhere. Like, he's not going to disappear.
I wasn't disregarding him. It's just like I can make that point without even bringing up.
Yeah, without Philip Lindsay in it, but he's a big part of it. I mean, people argue that Gordon produced, you know, in LA with Eckler, but Eckler had a very, very defined and different role than Melvin Gordon did. Lindsay's somebody that can actually step up on the goal line and take those, you know, 5-yard, 4-yard touchdowns that Gordon feasted on in LA. And as you said, if the Broncos offense isn't going to produce all those opportunities, then that's a lot of his production gone. I mean, Gordon, we're talking about a guy that only averaged above 4 yards a carry one time in his career in his 5 years in the league. Not to mention he's only played 16 games once in those 5 years. It's not, well, once was the holdout, but whatever. It's not a great situation. And I think the touchdowns are coming down. It's just, if he's not scoring, you know, 8-10 touchdowns a year, then what are you getting out of him? Sub 4 yards a carry, maybe 800 yards. It's not a great spot, especially with a very, very viable backup to take carries from him. So
if I may play devil's advocate here a little bit for Melvin Gordon, is that I actually thought when he ended his holdout last year, I actually thought he's not going to do nothing. This is Eckler's backfield. They're just going to play out the string. But he got out there and he looked pretty good. So for the eye test anyway, he did look a lot better than I thought. And you have to remember, before Eckler came along or before Eckler emerged, Melvin Gordon was a pretty solid RB1. And so I'm not boosting Melvin Gordon because, like you say, it's not a great offense. And there are, we don't have to worry about Royce Freeman. I guess his main competition is Philip Lindsay. And I think there might be a little bit of timeshare there. You see, this is the thing about Vic Fangio. I have no idea. This coach, I don't know if you know about this, Kev, but this coach is just, I don't know, he's kind of, weird stuff and, huh?
How do you feel about Pat Shurmur? Because he's their offensive coordinator.
He's all right. Giants, yeah. Right?
Yeah. He's all right. Like the Broncos were 28th or worst last season, scoring, offense, passing yards per game, first downs, third down conversions, and red zone offense. They scored 16 or fewer points in 9 games. I don't see that changing too much.
Mm-hmm. No, but I'm down on Melvin Gordon. At first I was high on him, but I don't know. It slowly started dawning on me that I think he's RB23, right behind David Montgomery.
All right. I guess for Richard, why don't you finish off with your second rookie there? This should be an interesting conversation.
J.K. Dobbins. First of all, how many running backs have we got on the team? You got Gus Edwards, you got Justice Hill, you got Dobbins, you've got Mark Ingram, and Lamar Jackson. So there's really, I mean, I just don't see him taking over Mark Ingram's job. In fact, one of our writers, I forget the guy who he went to a live game with the And he said that Mark Ingram looks like a beast out there still to this day. He just don't, he said, Kevin, do you remember who went to the Ravens game and was talking about it? Went to
Probably Mark.
Yeah. And he said that, just Mark Ingram looked like a beast, like out there. He just owned the field. So I just don't see like Dobbins will get in there. We're in this era where rookies don't make a lot of, aren't making a lot of, you know, inexperienced, no preseason games. See, this is the thing where I'm kind of a little bit, a guy like Dobbins, I really have to, see some tape. So.
All right. Well, it's a tough thing with rookies, especially with somebody like Ingram around. I guess, Kevin, why don't you go with your third bust, who's also competing with another running back for touches.
Yeah, so my third bust is Nick Chubb, and buckle up, boys, I've got stats. All right, so first 8 games played without, what's his name, Kareem Hunt, 100 yards per game, 6 touchdowns, 32 targets. Last 8 games, 86 yards a game, 2 touchdowns, and only 17 targets. Kareem Hunt's good, newsflash, terrible person, good football. On top of that, Kevin Stefanski is coming over to be the new head coach for the Browns. And last year, Chubb was basically, he basically was the Browns rushing attack. He had almost 350 touches, 1,500 rushing yards, and he accounted for 84.74% of non-quarterback rushing yards. And in Minnesota, like, Dalvin Cook was the guy, but between him, Madison, and Boone, Cook only accounted for 55% of non-quarterback rushing. So I think Stefanski is going to come over with the mindset that I need to kind of balance my backfield a little bit. He's going to give Kareem Hunt more touches, and that played out even last year. So this year, I think it's going to be even closer of a split. Chubb, again, is clearly it's kind of the same thing with Jacobs. Not as extreme, but he's clearly the worst receiving back in that backfield. In third down situations, they're going to have Kareem Hunt on the field. That's not even a question.
Yeah, Hunt is the steal of the draft.
Right,
yeah.
That's why you're drafting Kareem Hunt as, like, running back 26 or something.
Yeah, he is. Hunt is a steal. If you pick up Hunt, you're getting a steal, I think. Yeah, I completely agree about the Nick Chubb situation. But where have I got Chubb? I've got Chubb at RB10, which I actually think is a bit high. But where have you got Chubb, Kev?
I've got him at 9, but I tend to not really think about these things too much until I have to do something like this. Yeah. And now I'm going to put down.
What about you, John? Oh, you got to weigh in on Chubb.
Well, going off of that, I'll ask you guys, where do you personally have Kareem Hunt? I know Fantasy Pros has him at 28. Saying he's, you know, steal a draft, where would you ideally, Richard, rank Kareem Hunt?
I have him currently at RB26, just behind Jones and ahead of Cam Akers. Ronald Jones, I'm talking about here.
Yeah, poor Ronald. I have him at 28. Basically, he is the first non-starting running back I would take.
That's fair.
Yeah, I mean, and I would take him over, like, some potential starter. Like, I'd take him over Ronald Jones. I'd take him over Cam.
Let me see. Is he my highest non-starting running back? He might be. I think he is. Yeah, I believe.
Which he should be.
He should be.
He is. Yeah, he's my highest. Yeah, easily. He's easily my highest non-starting running back.
It's him, and then, of course, the immortal James.
Oh, yes, James White, always, 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 always. Yeah. Steady production. 8 points, no more, no less.
James White is RB32.
All right, I guess we'll go on to my final bust. We mentioned him a little bit earlier. It's Austin Eckler.
Why? Why?
I don't think he's going to be trash. As I preambled at the start, he's not going to be trash. I just think a lot of people are remembering what he did in the first half of last year, or like the first 4 games without Melvin Gordon. And people are, I don't think he's going to score that many touchdowns. I think he's even come out and said himself that he can't handle a full workload. He said he's not going to get like carries. He's not a bell cow. He knows, and the coach knows, that that's not the kind of player he is. He's going to maintain the role he had with Melvin Gordon, I think. And if those touchdowns come down, he scored a ton of them in the first 4 weeks. He scored how many? 1, 2, 3, 4. He scored 6 touchdowns through the first 4 weeks. That's not a rate that's going to continue. After week 4, he scored 0 rushing touchdowns, just so you know.
Receiving. Let's get to the receiving side of it.
Well, of course he's going to get receiving touchdowns, but again, if he has no rushing touchdowns with another back there,
with a check down Charlie type of quarterback, he's got a check down Charlie quarterback, man.
Tyrod Taylor is not a check down quarterback. Tyrod Taylor is a rushing quarterback. He will run before he panic dumps off to Eckler. Far more than Rivers did. Rivers is a check down quarterback. He cannot run. Tyrod will run for an extra 5 yards before he checks it down. So I think the targets are going to come down. He was average. He had 108 targets last year. I don't know if he's going to maintain that. There are weeks where he's getting 16 targets, like 12 targets. I don't know. In this offense with Tyrod built around it, I don't know. It's just a lot of people are expecting what he did the first 4 weeks. And I think there's going to be some disappointment. I'm not saying he's not going to be good. I'm just saying there's room for disappointment if his body doesn't hold up, which he thinks it might not. With a full
he
workload.
Thinks it might not? Does he not?
Oh. He's already said he can't handle a full workload. That's not the kind of back he is. So he said that.
Well, okay, so he's got Joshua Kelly and Justin Jackson. Kev, you can descend into this. You always have your wisdom on Austin Eckler. I know you like him.
Yeah, I like him, but 106 targets or whatever is pretty unreasonable. Like, I don't really see it happening. I don't really see Tyrod Taylor dropping back that many times to even pass. I think it's more likely Keenan Allen keeps his targets share and everyone else goes down. If let's just say he loses 20 targets, and he loses 20% of his scoring opportunities because the Chargers offense is going to be as good, that's a pretty decent amount of things losing. And last year was, let's be honest, a best case scenario for Eckler. There's almost no way he builds upon that.
I am RB12.
Yeah.
By the way,
you had 993 receiving. That's insanity.
I know it's a lot. I know, but that's his strength, right? And
no, he's not matching almost 1,000-yard receiving season with Tyrod Taylor. No chance.
Correct.
Probably true, but I don't think it's that much of a drop off. Well, he's gonna bust.
Put it like this: last year he had Justin Jackson as his backup already. Now Joshua Kelly's in the mix. With Melvin Gordon, he was RB15. Now I don't think he's gonna get better than what he was throughout the season. So where's all this production gonna come from? Like Kevin said, last year was probably best case scenario. I don't think he's gonna get better than he was last year, but he's still been getting drafted. What, RB14? Regularly, like 13 on Fantasy Pros. So I just don't see the room for profit there, and there's definitely going to be a little drop off with the new QB.
Okay.
Yeah.
Points to consider. Yeah. I got to weigh these things too. You do have me thinking. You do have me thinking. But
all right, let's move on to the wide receivers because this is a pretty long show here. Let's see if we can get through these ones a little quickly. Kevin, why don't you start with Adam Thielen there, your first bust on the list?
Yeah, Adam Thielen is a guy who I don't think I've ever rostered, but obviously he did good things when he was healthy. Last year he had a down year, be very unhealthy. I just don't really see like the Vikings as an offense that I want to target for pass catchers. Especially like Adam, I get that Stephon Diggs is leaving and that should theoretically open up a bunch of targets, but Adam Thielen was already pretty heavily targeted. I don't really see that going up. So, then you're basically counting on a guy who's like 30 years old. I think he's being drafted probably just a little bit too high. I don't really think he's going to be a bust or anything like that, but he's a little too high for my taste. The couple guys I'd rather have in front of him, like Tyler Lockett, I definitely have in front of him. Calvin Ridley, DJ Chark, those kind of guys. I just don't think Minnesota is a high volume pass attack.
Yeah. Richard, anything to add to Thielen?
No, I have to admit, I agree with Kevin. He's not a high temperature target for me. He's sort of a medium temperature target. So, yeah, he's not a high temperature target. It just seems kind of, he seemed kind of like a bland kind of target. There's nothing really, I don't know, he had that one good stretch, like where he was the top wide receiver for the first 8 games of the season a couple of years back. But ever since then, I don't know, he just had that injury. He's middle of the road. He's good enough. He's going to get targets from Kirk Cousins. It's kind of hard to see where the he might get a slight increase in target share without Diggs, but there's Olabisi Johnson and of course the Jefferson, the rookie entering the fray. So he just doesn't seem like a really exciting pick for some reason.
All right, I'll go with my bust now, my first wide receiver bust. It's one that I share with Kevin, since you mentioned low-volume passing attacks. I'm going to go with A.J. Brown. Obviously, he showed that he is a very talented receiver, amazing after the catch, but he only averaged 5.3 targets per game last year, which was tied for 53rd among wide receivers. obviously he's going to get more this year, but the Titans, there's not a high volume passing attack, like you said, about the Vikings. This, they were dead last in passing attempts per game last year, just under 27 passes per game. With Derrick Henry still there, I don't think they're going to start passing it around. I think it's still going to be the Henry show. And Brown's value is all going to hinge on whether or not he can continue breaking long runs or long gain after the catch. Of course, he has the talent to do it, but that's not really what I want to bank on for production, where he's being drafted. And if he doesn't get a sure, you know, target share and, you know, basic floor production, it's tough to draft him at, where is he, like 50th ish overall now? So it's a tough spot for me anyways. I don't know about what you were thinking, Kevin.
Yeah, he's wide receiver 19 right now, and I'm pretty much the same way. It's just the volume. You're basically counting on, I'm not saying they're fluke plays, but these type of plays are very varied. You can't, as much as people talk about Amari Cooper being a boom or bust guy, like AJ Brown is a boom or bust guy. He had 10 games last year with 3 catches or less. That's a problem. Not even to mention the target count. Like, I don't think they're going to ask Ryan Tannehill to throw the ball a ton more. Corey Davis is still there. He gets a lot of targets for some reason. The offense revolves around Derrick Henry. And even if AJ Brown gets more targets, I don't think you can just assume that he's going to be as efficient with them this year.
Still, a rookie wide receiver that receives 1,000+ yards that's a rookie receiver on the Titans getting 1,000+ yards. I just can't agree with you guys. I have him at WR19, and I think if you draft him, I don't think you're going to be disappointed. You're going to get WR2 numbers, I'm pretty sure. Like him and his fellow guy from Ole Miss, DK Metcalf. Both those guys, they're physical freaks, and they showed it. So,
I mean, I think people will be disappointed certain weeks. Like Kevin said, it's super boom or bust. I think there's going to be weeks where he catches like 3 passes for 30 yards because he couldn't break anything. And those, I think they'll pop up more often than you'd like, taking him as Fantasy Pros ranked him 39th, which is 38th, sorry, which is high. Richard, why don't you go with your first receiver bust?
My first receiver bust will be, as soon as I get my page up, I will take Odell Beckham. He is the quintessential diva wide receiver. You always think that he's going to do better. He's gone to Cleveland. I mean, you would have thought that with Baker Mayfield, there's just no connection there. There was more of a connection with Jarvis Landry. I don't see the connection with Odell Beckham, and I don't see it going to be happening this year either. I currently have him ranked at WR12, but that's a nervous WR12. I have Juju Smith-Schuster ahead of him and Robert Woods just behind him. I would be, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he doesn't live up to, if he doesn't end up a top 10 receiver. I think he'll be top 20. In fact, I'll stick my neck out too. I bet you, you know, we were talking about Adam Thielen before. I think Adam Thielen could probably have better numbers than Odell Beckham this year. Hey, let me put that. I'll make that a bold prediction.
I have Thielen on my Scott Fishbowl team. I like that. In the interest of time, Richard, why don't you move on with your second bust there?
All right, second bust. Okay. We talked about Tyrell Williams in the news, so I'm going to go with CeeDee Lamb. I don't know where this hype for CeeDee Lamb is coming from. I mean, there are, like, okay, he's going to be, how many 3 wide receiver sets are the Cowboys going to do? Are they going to do it on every single play? You know it's going to be Amari Cooper, and you know it's going to be Michael Gallup. So, I mean, you're going to add in CeeDee Lamb. Like, how many 3 wide receiver sets is he going to be in? I don't understand the hype for CeeDee Lamb. I think a lot of people are, he's overhyped, and people are, you know, thinking, oh, this guy, he's worth, I got him as WR71. Sorry.
Oh, that is low. 71. Oh, Kevin, I know you have a rebuttal for this one.
Oh, my God. I'm here to argue. All right. Randall Cobb last year. We all agreed he's pretty washed up. Yeah. 83 targets, 55 catches, 830 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's basically almost a floor. You could pretty much bank on 70 targets. Randall Cobb played a snap share,
let's see what a snap share. It doesn't even it out for me. 74% snap share. That's pretty good. I would say that he will be in a lot of three wide receiver sets. If you're getting a floor of Randall Cobb, and I think he's obviously more talented than Randall Cobb, and the ceiling is that he's better than Michael Gallup, and he takes Michael Gallup's spots, that's way more worth what a wide receiver 70.
Wide receiver 71, Richard, do you have him below, like, D.D. Westbrook and like,
yes.
Michael Pittman and what?
Yes, I do. He's below Michael Pittman.
No.
He's below Stills. He's below Fitzgerald. He's a rookie. I don't trust rookie wide receivers. I'm not buying in.
Action you want on an over-under. CeeDee Lamb is great. He's wearing 88, man.
Well, yeah, that counts for a lot. 88, Dez's number, right?
Yeah, if you wear 88 for the Cowboys, you're automatically guaranteed 85 targets. That's just 88 targets.
88 targets. There it is.
No, he belongs in the WR4, WR5 conversation, I'm afraid.
Oof. All right. Well, since we're talking about the Cowboys, I'll go on to my another bust of mine. Amari Cooper. I don't think he's going to be terrible, obviously. But I think he was already boom or bust. He had a lot of weeks where he wasn't producing. And now with CeeDee Lamb there, who's going to get his 88 targets with this Randall Cobb floor and Michael Gallup producing as well as he did. Actually, they had about the same amount of production over the course of the year, I believe. Definitely toward the end of the year, the targets and the yards per game were very, very similar the last 6 or 7 weeks of the season. And it's just, with an extra receiver there, I don't know if Cooper is going to reproduce another, you know, wide receiver 9 season. And if he does, then he's going to do it over the course of, you know, 3 weeks. And then the rest of the time, you're just complaining that you ever drafted him. So I think where he is, Fantasy Pros has him at 14. The guys around him, like Juju, DJ Moore, they're just safer with a better floor, especially with Ben back for Juju. And Cooper is very, very iffy for me as a dependable, you know, wide receiver 1 or borderline 2 as he's being drafted as.
They traded a lot to get him, remember?
Well, just the one first round pick that Kevin bet on and lost, but, you know, favorite bet. But we still let you on the show.
Cannot believe you got that. I could not believe it.
All right, Kevin, you and me have the same bust again. So why don't you go on with the scary one?
Oh, yeah, Terry McLaurin. Very similar to the other guys. Washington threw the ball 489 times last year, and they were playing from behind the majority of the time. So this year, they're not going to be much better. It's just a combination of the team's not very good, the quarterback's not very good. There's nothing on the offense that shows me that they're going to be very good. He's a good player, don't get me wrong. I like Scary Terry a lot. But he had 919 yards and 7 touchdowns in 14 games last year. While that's pretty okay, that's not really wide receiver 28 stuff. He doesn't really have this. The most important thing is that he doesn't have this, because that offense is just, there's no way it's going to be good enough for him to have like a 1,400-yard, 12 touchdowns. So if you're drafting him at wide receiver 28, you're pretty much just banking on getting the wide receiver 28, which is not what I
would. Yeah, Kevin, I totally agree about McLaurin. As he showed with Dwayne Haskins, it wasn't great. I mean, just even after his, you know, his introduction to the league, between week 7 and 17, McLaurin was WR48. You know, scored 7 points a game. It wasn't a great year. And like you said, at 28, you're drafting him kind of for what he was last year. I don't think he's going to have a ton of improvement. The ceiling's not there, and the floor is really bad, considering how bad the Washington football team is going to be. Moving on, I guess, to tight ends now. I'll go with mine first. It's Tyler Higbee. Ton of hype coming off of his some record-setting numbers from the end of last year. Between weeks 13 and 17, he finished as the tight end 1, averaged 11 targets a game, 104 yards a game. But Gerald Everett was injured, and Gerald Everett is no slouch on the other side of the formation there. Good receiving tight end. Cooper Kupp is going to be fully healthy again. Robert Woods is still there. And I don't see Tyler Higbee, you know, continuing to be this amazing receiver. Keep in mind that he played 58 games, you know, in his career, and in 56 of those, he didn't go over 48 yards. So, I mean, the first 58 games before his record-setting run, it's just a weird thing. I don't see him doing that again. I don't see the Rams focusing on Tyler Higbee as their main guy when Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are there. And it's just so much room for disappointment with Tyler Higbee going as the TE7 in a lot of leagues.
Yeah. Similar situation with me and Austin Hooper with David Njoku there. I just don't see, like, if there was one main tight end, the thing is that Austin Hooper and David Njoku, it's a similar thing, like Tyler Higbee. and Gerald Everett. They're both going to get, one guy's going to have one big game, and then the next guy's going to have the other big game. So, you know, it, and I don't think you can trust production for when you have two tight ends on a team that are both capable and productive in their own right.
Yeah. The way I think about it, and I think this applies for both your guys, is on those offenses, there's just way too many mouths to feed, and neither of them are talented enough to command targets.
Yeah.
All right, Big Kev, who's your bust?
My bust is Hunter Henry. He's currently going as tight end six, I believe, six or seven. And he's just not that good. Even with Phil Rivers throwing him the ball, he was tight end 12 in 2017 and tight end 8 in 2019. He obviously missed 2018 with injury. That's like not bad, but it's not great either. There's no reason to believe that. Again, I feel like we've talked about it like multiple times, but Tyrod Taylor is just not going to have enough volume to really make him a viable fantasy option. In 2017, 2019, when they finished like that, Rivers had second in pass attempts and seventh in pass attempts, whereas Tyrod Taylor in his 3 years as a starter, 24th, 25th, and 25th in pass attempts. So there's just no way there's going to be enough volume. He's not going to get the yardage. He's not going to get the targets. He's not going to get the touchdowns. And if you're drafting him at tight end eight, again, it's just a very limited ceiling. You're kind of banking on name recognition, to be honest. Like, I'd rather have so many other guys behind
him. I'd rather have Gronkowski.
Yeah. Gronkowski looks like he did 5 years ago.
That's what they say. I put him up to TE7.
Oh.
I'm going with the full narrative on Gronk. Brady doesn't have enough practice time with Evans and Godwin, so he's going to go back to what's familiar, throwing it to Gronk.
That's going with
the narrative.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think that's completely right. And that's why I put Gronkowski at TE7. He's a target and actually leaning towards a medium to high target for me. Temperature.
I like it.
Medium to high temperature.
I think that wraps up our show for the week. That was our busts show. Thanks to everybody who stuck around for the longer length of this show, but I think it was worth it. We got through a lot.
Gotta be unlimited. That's right.
Gotta be unlimited.
All right, guys. Again, everybody, thanks for listening. Richard, Kevin, we'll do this again next week.
All right, peace.
All right, take care, man. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening, everybody.